Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Salt Lamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Who would I rather get a power rankings from? The answer is nobody. Nobody. I couldn't sleep last night. Whatever you're listening to this, just assume it was that last night. Thinking about where producer Evan was going to put the New York Mets. I mean, we'll get to that. We'll get to like whether or not he will put them as number one, because Evan, the other places that do these power rankings.
Yep.
Some of them have the Mets at number one. Don't tell me where you put them. Some of them have the Mets at one. Some have them as low as four. I have them at 15. I'm just kidding. But it's all over the place, and that's what makes it so good. But now, Evan, it's good thing is that we're sort of settling into the season, yeah. And we don't have to be all over the place like you fraudulently were the first time you did this. Who do you have? You had like
the Angels,
like the White Sox at like number two or something. Right? You're the Angels, yeah. We're the Angels.
Yeah, they've fallen off a cliff. I mean, I think like based on trying to sell the Angels the first time, I realized the cliff was probably not that far. It was probably within walking distance of the power rankings. Because it was like, yeah, their only good bullpen members can't lead chance. And it was like, I mean, he can only pitch so many times, you know. So
here's a question for you.
No.
Best of seven series, who wins, the White Sox or the Rockies?
Man.
Good answer. Yeah, I hate to ask you a question where you have to give your opinion.
No, I'm going to go with the White Sox.
Okay.
I just feel like they have a couple more starters that are actually halfway decent. Now, granted, they still need to hit, and they can't really do much of that. And obviously, at Coors Field, I guess that would be a little different too. But Shane Smith has been absolutely dealing, so he's one of the guys in there. And then before Martin Perez got hurt, he was doing really well.
Basically, like I feel like if you kept talking for another 5 minutes about this, you were going to say the Rockies. Well, you know, the White Sox, have good pitching, but this guy's hurt and that guy's hurt. Yeah. But, you know, they can't really hit, but it didn't really. All right. Anyway.
And they got their third Rule 5 pick.
Third Rule 5. Is that a record? Do we know?
I looked back. The Padres in the early 2000s or maybe early 2010s had three. Actually, the Mets backup catcher, Luis Torrens, was one of the three. They had three. So they're matching it right now. If somebody else who's a Rule 5 pick somehow goes on waivers and they pick them up, that'll officially be the record of four. But three.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm very eagerly anticipating that. It's very exciting. All right. Top 10 power rankings. Number 10, what do you got?
Yeah. So at number 10, I was considering not putting them in just strictly based on how bad they were against the Mets. But then I thought back on the fact that they're actually pretty decent. It's the Philadelphia Phillies. 9-4 at home, 5-5 in the last 10. They were swept by the Mets, but they took 2 from the Cubs and 2 from the Marlins, which the Marlins isn't saying much, even though the Marlins' new rookie catcher is absolutely insane. The guy they got from the Yankees in the Jazz Chisholm trade, Augustin Ramirez, he's like...
By the way, can I just say?
Yeah.
The Yankees, they got to do a better job of identifying catchers.
Yeah, I know.
they give up that guy.
Yeah.
Carlos Narvaez is analytically the best defensive catcher in baseball.
Yeah, I
know. What's happening?
Luis Torrens with the Mets last year was in their farm system again, and they let him go for cash. So, yeah.
All right. Well, good for them. Good for them. Anyway, Phillies number 10. So,
Stott, ever since he moved to leadoff, has been raking. He's been really good. Schwarber, 7 home runs, 18 RBIs. He's been doing well. Harper's been carrying his end of the rope. Jesus Luzardo is looking like one of the better acquisitions of the offseason, as a 1.73 ERA. He's doing really well. It was actually pretty crazy because they were playing the Cubs, or they are playing the Cubs. I think they're done. I think the series is over. But the Cubs apparently almost got him, but then they
turned down to physicals,
and then he absolutely dealt against the Cubs. So that was pretty wild. Here's the one thing I have to say about the Phillies, though, is we love Jordan Romano, great guy. He's been on the pod. Why is he still closing? It's crazy to me.
Because he's a great guy.
Like, yeah.
What's their other option? Alvarado?
Yeah, Alvarado. Rom? I know in the past he's kind of stunk, but he's been absolutely insanely good this year. But they seem to stick to him in the eighth and Romano in the ninth. And it's just like Romano's got a 12-19 ERA. He's kind of blown up every time they put him there. And I'm just like, it's kind of similar with a lot of these other closers like Clase and Williams, where it's like, I get that, like, you brought him in to do that, but it's just one of those things where it's like, when do you kind of pull the, you know?
I think that's a great topic. Closers, how long do you ride closers? Yeah, anyway. But it's a topic for another day. Speaking of topics for another day, we should also look at which player who failed a team's physical or raise enough physical concerns that the team did not acquire them will end up with a better year. Jesus Luzardo or Jeff Hoffman?
Yeah. Yeah, true.
You're supposed to go, ooh.
Jeff Hoffman with the Blue Jays dealing. And he had two teams that failed him. So he's got even more of a chip on his shoulder, right? He's got the Braves and the Orioles. So.
I love it. I told you my Jason Bay story with the Mets, right? I've told you this story.
I don't know.
Oh, well, you remember you were like 3 years old when Jason Bay signed with the Mets, right?
I remember him with the Mets.
You were excited? Do you have a Jason Bay uniform?
He was just a guy in infamy too, where it was like we first got him, everybody was happy, and then it was like a perfect example of we finally spend big and the guy is just not.
I'm going to try to make it as short as possible.
Okay.
He was a free agent. Him and Matt Holliday were the big free agents. I think it was 2010, heading into 2010. And so leading into 2009, halfway through the year, the Red Sox and Bay agreed to a 4-year deal. And I think it was 4 years, $60 million. And they basically almost had they had their press release ready to go. Press conference was almost ready to go. The last minute they come in and they say, sorry, we're going to take the deal off the table. Because your knee's bad. Now, Bay's knee was never a problem. He didn't have a problem with his knee at all. Yeah. He ends up getting 3 second opinions. Nothing wrong with his knee. Nothing wrong. they basically took the deal down to, I think, 2 years, and he had to have knee surgery. And he's like, there's nothing wrong with my knee. And so, ultimately, though, it sort of blew up his market.
Yeah.
And then he, at the end of the day, the Mets kind of came in and saved him. I think that's exactly what they signed him to, 4 years, 60, but he didn't have that much of a market. But like that was, and I still say to this day, I know that Jason Bay had a rough go with the Mets, but I still say if he stayed at Fenway, he would have been really, really good. So anyway, but that's my best failing a physical story.
Anyway. Yeah. That's crazy. I know, and it's happened so much lately. Obviously, Correa being the big one, but
yeah, and Correa's been, you know, he's had some hiccups, right?
Yeah,
but you know, I think that if you look at what the Mets have taken him.
Yeah, I think so. And also, the tricky part with the Twins too is it just feels like their big three of Buxton, Correa, and Lewis just can't stay on the field together. So I feel like if you just have one of those guys, it's kind of like you can almost deal with it, and you're like, hey, but when he's out there, he's dominant. Whereas when you got three of those guys and it's just like rotating injuries, it's kind of brutal.
Yeah. The Twins are not in your top 10 either, I bet.
Yeah.
All right, Phillies number 10. Once again, absolutely no respect, no love for the Phillies from you. All right, number 9.
So number 9, I have the Cleveland Guardians, 8-4 at home, 6-4 in the last 10. They took 2 from the Yankees, 1 from the Red Sox, going through the AL East gauntlet there. Steven Kwan is hitting 346, tied for 4th in Major League Baseball. Kyle Manzardo is kind of showing them why it was the right choice maybe to trade Josh Naylor, 7 home runs, 18 RBIs. The rotation, I was looking at the numbers, the rotation is terrible, but the bullpen is really good outside of Paul Sewald and Emmanuel Clase. Those two guys are kind of like, they're both in ERA.
Gattis is Manales, man.
Yeah.
And Kate Smith, both those guys, they're really good.
Yeah, so it's like if you just took those guys like off the roster for a second, their bullpen ERA would probably be right at the top. Because
it's the same thing, though. Like, they were chasing starters last year.
Yeah.
You know, remember? They got,
Boyd.
And Boyd. Cobb. I mean, it's the same sort of deal. And you know, I know they made the ALCS last year, but you just would love them to say, hey, okay, there you go. There's the lockdown guy. There's the guy that's going to carry you. You know, like Detroit. Yeah, Detroit had – I know they beat Detroit, but still, Detroit had – at least they have the guy. In this case, this year, they have a couple guys. And then you do the bullpen games. Anyway, I don't know. I'm with you. Number 9 is probably a good spot for them just because I know they win. But, boy, I just like to see better starting pitching. Anyway, number 8.
So number 8, they've had kind of a rough go of it lately. That's why they're down this far, but they've been pretty good early on and kind of just stunk lately. It's the Padres, 12-4 at home, 5-7 on the road, 3-7 in the last 10. They lost 5-6 to the Rays and the Tigers. So they've had kind of a rough go of it, but Fernando Tatis Jr. might be the front runner for NL MVP. Batting 346, 8 home runs, 18 RBIs. They have the best bullpen ERA in baseball, 1.63. And Nick Pivetta is another guy, along with Lizardo, that's just been absolutely dealing a 1.20 ERA so far in his time with the Padres. So it's kind of, they kind of got a weird lineup going on because they get no production out of catcher with Diaz and Maldonado. They've really gotten no production out of like the corner outfield spots with Hayward, Joe, and all these other random guys. They got Brandon Lockridge and all these other guys. But, it's kind of a weird lineup because they got the Machados and they got the Tatis. And when Arise is healthy, they got him. And if Bogarts can ever get going, they got him. But then outside of them, and obviously Merrill's hurt, but it's like they got like 5 guys that can carry the team. And then it's just a bunch of guys.
Well, I think Merrill's the one. That's the one.
Yeah.
You get him healthy, it makes a huge difference. I mean, let's not forget. Yeah. I mean, this is as good as Tatis is. I mean, Merrill is a potential, potential MVP guy. But yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna. This is gonna be. Here's my prediction to you.
Yeah.
I vow to you, number 8 will be the lowest you put the Padres.
Yeah, I mean that's fair because it's
the highest, whatever the highest.
Yeah, well, it's one of those weird things.
Wait,
right?
So no, I mean the lowest.
The lowest.
No, I mean the high. I'm just, you gotta agree with whatever I say, so I just try to get you.
I think it would be the lowest.
Stop agreeing with me.
I think it would be.
Agree with me if you agree with me. So but what I'm saying is that number 8, they will not be this high ever again. In other words, they're going to be better every single power rankings you do from here on in.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense because I think that – I know, but I think that 8 is the lowest that they'll be.
Right, the lowest, like feeling bad about themselves, the lowest.
True. I was also thinking like eight number lowest. Like I think they'd probably be higher up than eight moving forward if everything keeps going the way it's going outside.
Oh, you think they're going to be worse?
I think I'm confusing the vibes and the numbers. Cause it's like, I think.
So you finally do disagree with me.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, good.
I think vibes wise and number wise, eight is the lowest they'll be. I think they'll only move up on the rankings and their vibes will only get better because of course they have Jose Iglesias currently riding the bench, but doing decent over there in San Diego.
So you do agree with me. Okay.
Okay.
This will be the worst the Padres are, the worst the Padres feel about themselves, the worst we're going to view the Padres for the rest of the year. This will be the worst. Correct. In other words, we could see them at 7 next week. We could see them at 5, 4. They are never getting past 8.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Oh, thank you. All right.
Kind of got lost in the sauce there.
All right. No, it's good. It was good. It was good podcasting. Excellent job. Number seven
is the Mariners. 10-6 at home, 7-3 in the last 10. They took 2 of 3 from the Red Sox and the Marlins. Cal Raleigh, I mean, his average is obviously not there, but power wise, that guy, it's crazy. He's not, I feel like the rest of the league is not even close to him when it comes to.
I caught up with some of the Mariners. By the way, Casey Lawrence.
Yeah.
The guy picked up and he keeps on going. It's picked up by the Blue Jays.
Oh, okay.
Undrafted Casey Lawrence. Go check out. I love that conversation. I dropped it over the weekend. It was on Saturday, but, it was, about what it's like to be an undrafted 37 years old Casey Lawrence, but he gets DFA. He picked up by the Blue Jays. So
it's gotta be even tougher because it's one thing if you get undrafted in like, basketball, it's 2 rounds. NFL, it's 7 rounds.
Oh, it was 50 rounds, Evan.
50 rounds. That's crazy.
It was 50 rounds.
That's an all-time low vibe.
Yeah, you think Shador Sanders feels bad about himself? How did Casey Lawrence feel? That's actually, I should tweet that out. That's a good promo. But what I wanted to do to talk to Cal Raleigh, and I just missed him. I talked a little bit, but not for the podcast. We did the podcast with Connor Wong and the Red Sox, the catcher, and we brought up the thing about the Mariners, not the Mariners, the Marlins, how their coaches are calling their pitches in the minor leagues. And I was surprised that Wong said, oh yeah, I can see that because a lot of times as a catcher, you get up to the plate and it's in your head, especially now, Evan, where there's so much going on with these catchers. I mean, there's so much they have to think about with the pitch clock, with the analytics, with the scouting reports, with the pitch comm, all of it.
Yeah.
So my point is I want to talk to Cal Raleigh, and hopefully maybe I can, about that dynamic because they're just, to your point, there just isn't a lot of guys like him.
Yeah. No, I think that's the craziest part, and I think that's why, at least in Mets land and maybe across baseball, that's why Mike Piazza's kind of like held in a high regard because it was like, man, this guy can hit as a catcher because it's so rare. Like Adley Rutschman's doing pretty well this year, but it was like when he first came up, people were like, oh my God, if you can hit that well as a catcher, you know, you should build the entire franchise and pay him whatever he wants. But Cal Raleigh just like.
But Mike Piazza had to worry about like half the things these catchers have to worry about now.
Exactly.
Anyway, another great topic. I'm writing these topics down. All right. Anyway, so the Mariners. I'm sorry, I interrupted you again.
No, all good.
Mariners number 7.
Mariners in. Yeah, Jorge Polanco's been another guy that they brought back. He's been really solid. .377 batting average, 7 home runs, 20 RBIs. Andrés Munoz, one of the best closers in baseball, hasn't allowed a run yet. So they got.
I looked up their first base production. Not good.
Yeah, no.
So anyway, everybody
on the planet who actually pays attention during the offseason was like, guys, you can't not sign or trade for a first baseman. Like, it's crazy. So.
Well, they didn't, but they're winning. But you know what? We'll ask the guy who makes the decision next week. Jerry DePoto is slated to come on the podcast once again. All right, and I'll tell him you put him at number 7. Slighted him. Number 6.
Yeah, so number six, I have the Yankees, 10-5 at home, 6-4 in the last 10, took one from the Guardians, two from the Blue Jays. Judge and Goldschmidt lead the MLB in average right now. Judge is first at 406, Goldschmidt second at 365. Trent Grisham is currently batting 294 with 7 home runs and 14 RBIs, which is crazy because I think most people, at least across baseball and at least in Yankee land, probably assume that he would just be their, you know, late inning defensive replacement, but he's been absolutely raking for them. And then the one thing with them, which I think they're finally starting to do now, which is similar to what I brought up with the Phillies, is Luke Weaver has yet to give up a run, and yet you keep running Devin Williams out there, even though he's given up runs every single time. And I think the thing is, it's like, if they started the season with Luke Williams, which obviously they, or Luke Weaver, which obviously they didn't because they acquired Devin Williams and gave up prospects and everything, I think they would probably, their record would be closer to the top of the power rankings than kind of like middle of the road.
Yeah, but yeah, listen, I mean, that's how it works. Like April, you just run these guys, you keep doing it, and then at the end of April, I mean, it was just so bad. And that's frustrating. I said this at the beginning of the year with the Yankees. I said, we can pick apart not having Soto and having, you know, all these injuries to the starting rotation. But when you had that 1-2 dynamic of Luke Weaver and Devin Williams, I'm like, oh my goodness, how are you going to get through that? You have the lead. It's all automatic.
Yeah.
But, you know, mea culpa. No. Really.
I think if you ask most people, like, which one would be the one to fall apart, I think most would probably say.
Oh, Luke Weaver's so good. He's so good to talk to. So good to talk to. He is. I hope that, Luke, I just want to let you know that whatever has been said about the Yankees on this podcast.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily reflect my view of you. Certainly, I think you are one of the best relievers, one of the most entertaining, one of the solutions in getting baseball not to be boring.
Yeah.
But I love that, you know, after the Yankees won that World Series game and it was in the clubhouse and he's talking about how he went back and watched the comeback, the Netflix thing on the 2004 Red Sox and said, this is the blueprint. I'm like, that's what I want you to say. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a funny situation with that too, because they come back against the Yankees and it's like, all right, you guys, we're the Yankees, but you gotta go watch that. Cause obviously they're doing the same thing, but it's just,
yeah, kind of, they don't care about that. They just wanted to figure out or have some hope. They had no hope. I did watch the Ron Howard produced, documentary on the World Series, Dodgers Yankees. Yeah, it was okay. It was okay. It was like one of these things where, A lot of Chelsea Freeman, which is fine.
Yeah.
And, I think it was one of these things where you go into it, you have to throw that together pretty quick.
Yeah.
They do a pretty good job. They obviously have the interviews after. One thing that was interesting when I saw the part where he leaves Trinan in that last game. And Dave Roberts was like, I looked across and I looked at Freddie Freeman for basically acknowledgement whether or not I should leave Trinan in. Because he went out there and I think they had him mic'd up, said, this is your last batter. And he gets a one pitch out.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, and then he's like, he was ready to take him out. But anyway, you're welcome, Ron Howard. You're welcome. I've said more nice things about your documentary than I did about the Netflix one. Yeah. Anyway, all right. Number six, Yankees. That's pretty, that's the highest. I don't even know how to phrase it anymore. That's the worst they've been in your list since you've been doing
it.
Did you have them at number one 1 week?
I think really early on when they were, you know, using the torpedo bats and everybody was like, what the hell's going on?
Speaking of which, is everybody in your Mets world buzzing about what Dickie Scott said about Jeff McNeil?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's insane. It really is insane, the part where he's saying how, like, this is the guy who won a batting title using a completely
different bat. When you put it in that perspective, so people missed it. Dickie Scott, the AAA manager for Syracuse Mets, was on the podcast and said, you know what? Jeff McNeil, he loves that torpedo bat. He loves it. He couldn't say enough nice things about it. Did you've been watching the Mets game since McNeil came up? He's using it. Have they talked about this at all? Or,
I mean, I don't think they've talked about it yet because they've more been talking about the fact that he's playing center field. Like, he played, so he's playing center field on, today's Monday. So he's playing center field today. He played center field on Sunday. So it's kind of like a weird dynamic, because it's like, at first they didn't send, they sent down Beatty because they were like, we need a backup outfielder. But then now the guy doesn't play at all and McNeil's playing center. So that's kind of,
well, tell him to start talking about this torpedo bat thing. It's more interesting.
Will do.
And it's also self-serving. Five.
Yeah, so five, I got the Cubs, 9-7 at home, 8-5 on the road, 6-4 in the last 10. They took two from the Dodgers, one from the Phillies. Tucker's been raking. Bush has been raking. Seiya Suzuki's been raking. Pete Crow Armstrong's been raking. So that whole middle of the lineup has been absolutely dominant. And the craziest thing, and I thought this was the case, and then I actually looked it up, Pete Crow Armstrong has 5 home runs and 19 RBIs. 4 of his home runs have come against the Dodgers, because he had 2 in one game in L.A., and then he's hit 2 against them when they were at Wrigley Field. So it's just, the guy loves raking against
them. You know why? He's from L.A. He's from Westlake. Harvard-Westlake, right? Yeah. Yeah.
He put me something. I mean, I don't even know if he was there for them, but same situation going on. And then Kyle Tucker is just, he's a guy who's going to, he's the next highest paid guy. I'm pretty positive on the market.
Oh, you think?
Wow. Vladdy and Soto. Jeez. That's our bold prediction for the day.
God.
Kyle Tucker's going to get paid. No, but it's
Kyle Tucker. He's like, he's not signing a 1-year deal. Yeah, no. Who else?
I mean, the starters, as we discovered this offseason, it's kind of a weird thing, because Framber Valdez is a guy that probably should get paid, although...
Yeah, he's not getting paid as much as a position player. What's Alonso's deal?
He's 3 years and something, but he has an opt-out after this year, so he's...
Yeah, so that's... There you go. There you go.
Him and Tucker, but I definitely think with Tucker...
Oh, Tucker will be more. Yeah, there's no question. Cubs, by the way, I think the Cubs are better than you're letting on, but that's your prerogative to be wrong.
Yeah.
Number four...
Yeah, so number four, I've kind of, with number four and number five, I've kind of contradicted the way I've gone about it in the past. I have the Dodgers at number four, even though they just lost and got swept by the Cubs in a 2-game series. 12-3 at home, 6-4 in the last 10. They took 2-3 from the Pirates, which was, it was cool watching that Paul Skenes Yamamoto game. Paul Skenes, it's kind of crazy, some of the quotes that are already coming out. It's like, man, this guy desperately wants to get out of Pittsburgh. Some of the quotes, he's very depressed. And that's what made that conversation that you and Ottavino had about trading the draft picks all the more interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Pirates would have given up a chance to get a Skenes, because obviously he's insanely good, but it would have been crazy to see one of these, you know, top teams that are super competitive actually have a guy like that at the top.
Love that. I mean, I love that we focus so much on the fake trades. But we don't do the fake trades that have to be fake, because he can't do them. Yeah. You know, that sort of deal with the rights to draft Paul Skenes. I don't think the Pirates do it. I don't. It's, you know, because especially for an organization like that, because there was so much certainty in what that guy was going to be. And also when you have that certainty and the control you have, if you have if you're taking a flyer on a guy, if you have like a Henry Davis, we think he's going to be, but who knows? We'll take him number one.
Yeah.
You trade the rights. Like if that was that 2021 draft, which I'm obsessed with for some reason, that 2021 draft, and you said, we're going to give up the number one pick and we're going to trade whoever has the number one pick, I bet trades it, but they don't trade the Skenes number one pick draft 2023.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, obviously Cruz has been doing pretty well lately and Langford, but it's like, who would you have gotten in a package with more picks that would have been near?
Who's the dude they drafted number one last or in the first round? He's raking. I did a spring training game and he was like 18 years old playing.
Yeah, Connor Griffin. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, good for them. I hope it works out for them. I like Ben Sherrington. I hope it works out. It just sucks that they have such a terrible owner.
Yeah. So they're kind of just stuck in neutral. That's the kind of the funny thing when Tommy Pham signs somewhere. It's like he's with a club and it's like, you got no chance to win, but you don't have a left fielder. So I'm going to come in, then you're going to trade me. I'm going to go to a winner and we're going to go all the way. But
yeah, I mean, that's how it works. I mean, honestly, that's what the Pirates were doing with Andrew Heaney.
Yeah.
You know, Pham. That's what they try to do. They try to get these 1-year deals.
Yeah.
You know, so I think Ottavino has said this, like the Pirates were willing to give him a deal, 1-year deal.
Yeah.
So that's what they think. I mean, that's And yeah, going back to, you know, when Rich Hill was playing for them.
Yeah, true.
There's, in that case, there was like, oh, there's a glimmer of maybe we'll be by, then they fall apart and they're selling anyone. Anyway, the Dodgers, you have at number four.
Yeah.
And it really is, first of all, whoever took the over on 104.5 wins can't feel good about things right now.
Yeah, no.
And we say this embarrassment of riches with pitching, but holy mackerel, Evan.
Yeah.
Snell, Glasnow.
I think that's always, I honestly think that's kind of more the reason why these GMs don't spend so much is all the injuries, especially Glasnow. I mean, I feel like he's, I can't remember the last season he actually got through all his starts. It just feels like every year it's like he's electric when he's on the mound, but you're not going to have it for long. So kind of just get what you can out of it.
Right now with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Give me their top three starters.
I mean, Yamamoto is definitely number one because he's probably in the Cy Young race right now. I think he has a 1.06 ERA. Second, I think is Dustin May. He's having a really good start to the year. And then after that, I would maybe Sasaki. I'm trying to think of.
Yeah, it's interesting. And go back to what Brandon Gomes said in the podcast. It stuck with me is that, you know, you have this shock and awe offseason, and it's like the goal is to make the moves in the offseason so you don't have to make the moves and pay triple the price at the trade deadline. And here they are. They're going to end up having to pay triple the price. They're going to end up having probably to get a starting pitcher. So
yeah, cause it's like, you know, you got some guys like Gonsolin, I think is coming back semi soon. You got that guy, Ben Kasparius, that's made a couple starts. And
he's been doing multiple inning relief stuff. Yeah, he's been pretty good. Anyway, and then Trident's banged up now too, right?
Yeah. Banged up. They got a couple. Yeah. Like the back, they still have Scott and they still have Yates back there. So they definitely still have a solid back.
Well, and in August, they'll have Joe Kelly too. So that's
there you go. There you go.
all right. Number three.
So number three, the top three was kind of tricky because I felt like it could have gone in any order. And I think that's what the,
it really wasn't that tricky.
The other power.
Don't lie.
But it's the Giants at number three, 9-4 at home, 10-6 on the road, 6-4 in the last 10. They took 2-3 from the Brewers and 2-3 from the Rangers. They had no business. I mean, granted, it was a tie game and they walked it off, so they probably could have won it anyway. But that walk-off call yesterday was the craziest thing of all time, where Helly Aramos, he hits a ground ball that should be an out. They throw it past first base. He rounds third. They throw it away at third. He scores it inside the Parker to walk the game off. That was crazy.
Can I just tell you something? I appreciate everything that you do. You work tremendously hard. You're a very talented young man, and you go above and beyond, including giving me the home run call of the day every day. But I actually think that you're getting home run calls for home run call a day of people that I have to go to Baseball Reference to pronounce their names every single time. I'm not even lying, Evan. I think you're doing it on purpose now. Oh, yeah, I think you're doing games. I know how to pronounce that name, but I'm not. Yeah. You just mentioned it's Elliot. It's Elliot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Not Elliot.
At first, I thought you were talking about the announcer's name, and I was like, Dwayne Kuiper's not that.
No, there's some announcer's names too. It's like I can't go to Baseball Reference. The tell is when I do that. When I, you know, we do the podcast, a home run call of the day, and I go, I say it so quick.
Yeah.
You know, what a day it is to be alive. Baseball. Yay. All right.
Yeah, I know. Anyway. And there's some of these guys, their names are pretty wild. It's like, that's why I guess that's probably the hardest part of being an announcer is being like, all right, I got to go down to the field, ask maybe the translator to tell me how to say his name. And then it gets all tricky.
So. Yeah. Well.
But Logan Webb is another guy that he could probably be in the Cy Young. He's 1.98 ERA. He's been their ace for like years now, and I feel like he's kind of slept on. Now, granted, the last couple of years, I guess he hasn't finished the best, so maybe that's the reason why he's out of it. But he's just a guy that it just feels like every year you're like,
you know, it'll be fascinating, like how, you know, if Buster Posey like does what Chris Young did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He does the whole like, I'm a former player. I know how important it is to get uncomfortable at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
That's going to be really, really interesting. All right. Number three. So number two, hold on. I got to figure this out. Number two, number one. Okay. Okay. All right. Go ahead. What's number two?
All right, so number two, I have the Detroit Tigers.
What?
Absolutely going insane lately. 13-3 at home, 8-2 in the last 10. Took 2 of 3 from the Padres, and I've been checking on our guy RDT. He's in shambles over the Orioles lately.
Oh yeah, man,
it's been a rough sled for the old
poor guy. It is. A quick aside.
Yeah.
I honestly feel bad for the Orioles, like, you know, Eric and everybody there. I feel bad, man. Like, because you go back to when the new owner comes in, everything's going to change. You're going to get these guys. They don't get that guy. They don't get that stuff. They don't get the Corbin Burns in the offseason. They sort of bank on some of these other guys. Our great friend of the program, Charlie Morton, having a rough year. Tough to see.
Cigano,
what's he doing?
He had a good run because they were like, oh wow, he's actually good. And then I think he's been struggling.
Yeah, Grayson Rodriguez hurt. You don't get any extensions. You don't like everything this has taken this turn for them.
Yeah.
It's just, you had this, all these vibes last year, really throughout last year, and you were still riding high, I think, throughout the course of the entire year with the new ownership. And then once they get knocked out, and you go through that off season, it's almost like, really?
Well, it's also one of those things where it's like, granted, they lost Burns, but I feel like the past couple of years, they've been kind of riding the high and more or less running it back. And it's like, it's one thing to run it back, similar to kind of what the Mets did, where it's like, okay, you make the NLCS. Let's say for them, they make the ALCS, but they've been eliminated in the wild card round or I don't remember. Were they in the wild card round or were they in? I think they were in the wild card round the past 2 years because it was the Rangers. And then I'm blanking.
Well, they got beat by KC. Yeah, they get beat by KC.
Yeah, so it's like, 2 years in a row, they've kind of run it back, and they've had the exact same fate 2 years in a row. So it's kind of hard.
You know, and Santander, you lose him.
Yep.
You know, that was a big part. No matter what he's doing this year, but it's still with Toronto, but still what he did for them.
Yeah.
That's tough to replace. Obviously, they've had the injuries across the board. We mentioned them. A lot of these, you haven't had the influx of awesomeness from the minor leagues. It's funny because you say this, oh my goodness, this embarrassment of riches in Norfolk. Well, all right, tell me the players after sort of the Gunnar Henderson came up. Tell me the players that have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Tell me.
Because
I don't know.
The ones you look at are Kerstad. I think he's been not great.
You know who's been – I got to look it up. But you know who's, at least last year, was the best player was the guy they traded to Milwaukee, Ortiz.
Yeah, Ortiz, yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you don't even have that. So Jackson Holliday, you know, he was supposed to be the cream of the crop, right?
Yeah.
And the reality is, you know, he's going to be okay. He'll be fine. But right now, he's just fine.
Yeah.
As we sit here, he's sitting 233. Let's see. Yeah, couple home runs. You know, it's he's just fine, but he's, you know who he's not? He's not Christian Campbell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's the craziest part about it all. It's like, oh my God, you know, you got all these guys, but it really comes down to what you've always said, which is like the certainty aspect of it. Because it's like they had all these guys and they could have very easily flipped them for the certainty, but instead they were like, no, we're going to ride this out and try to ride these young guys. And so far, it's not really.
Yeah. Holliday right now, 673 OPS.
Yeah.
0.0 war. So I think he'll be good, but the question is, will he be a star?
Yeah.
Will he be a star? And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And that's what they need. They needed these guys to come up and be stars. So far, we've talked about more about the Orioles and the Tigers at number two. So the Tigers are good. The Tigers are, you know.
Speaking of a guy that used to be, like, kind of in that, like, oh, man, we thought he was going to be a big deal, and he's not, as Spencer Torkelson.
Like, oh, but now he is a big deal.
Yeah, now 255, 8 home runs, 24 RBIs, kind of solved their first base thing. Their bullpen's been dominant. Tommy Kahnle, who I think was kind of like an oversight as a bullpen addition in the offseason a little bit from the Yankees, has been dominant for them, 0.87 ERA. And then the top four in their rotation, Tarik Skubal, Jack Flaherty, Casey Mize, and Jackson Jobe all have a sub-3 ERA. So.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, they're going to be a tough out, because last year they were a tough out anyway without their starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And imagine if they had Bregman.
Yeah. And the funny thing is Baez, I mean, granted, it's only been 20-something games, but he's hitting .301. So if he could suddenly become a factor again for them, that would be pretty wild.
So, number one is going to be the Mets. Now, Bleacher Report had the Mets 4. I think of the Giants 1.
Yeah.
I think MLB.com had the Mets 1.
Yeah.
If I remember right. But you obviously have the Mets. You're contractually obligated to have the Mets 1.
It was one of those things where, cause right now, the series is 2-1 against the Nationals. They're playing right now. The Mets are winning 3-0. So if you split against the Nationals, it's not the best look. But I think that could be either held against them or like, hey, we're looking at the 8 wins coming into the series as compared to the 2-2 series.
I think, I was telling this to Dickie Scott at the manager of the AAA team. I do think the Mets have gotten to that point where they expect to win now.
Yeah.
Like this is, and I get it. Like when you get Juan Soto, that's a big deal. But it's more than that to me. It's about the pitching. Like we knew, you know, Soto, you got a good Alonso, good for you. You know, you got a really good lineup, Nimmo and McNeil's back and everything, Alvarez and everything else. But really the question is, would you be able to get the pitching, do the same sort of pitching approach that you did last year and do it this year? Is it going to work? And I don't know about you, but I know that some people are like, oh, they think they're so smart, it's not going to work again, right? Am I wrong?
No. That was the entire offseason. It was like I partially agreed and I partially disagreed. And
of course, hold on. I would say, can you mark that? Let's put that on the bumper stickers.
Yeah, that's why
I'm producer Evan. I partially agree and I partially disagree.
Yeah. But it was one of those things where it was like last year it was like it almost felt sustainable even though it was only 1 year of it. And then so far this year it's like, okay, you know, at first everybody was like, obviously it's Burns, the connection with Milwaukee. And then I was like, okay, no, okay, maybe Fried. Okay, maybe they can get this guy, but you know, they won't re-sign Alonso, but they'll get a pitcher and Soto. And then they just kind of stayed away from the pitching and kind of just re-signed their own and signed, you know, a bunch of like mid-tier guys like Montas, who obviously hasn't even pitched for us yet. But yeah, I do think they've come to the realization. And I remember back when we were doing the fake trades things and talking with Sammy, and he's like, it's kind of weird. You have two different front offices. You have a front office that spends, you know, $1 million, $1 trillion on the lineup and spends nothing on pitching. But I think that's kind of become their identity, is like, hey, we'll buy whatever hitter we want. But when it comes to pitching, you know, we feel good about, you know, finding certain traits.
Maybe they're smart, man. Like, it's Blake Snell's hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I'm going through the other list. Like, who else will the other free agent? Well, Flaherty's been pretty good, right? Pivetta's, you know, that's the guy that would be like a Mets guy, the Pivetta.
Yeah. Cause I remember coming into the offseason. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why he, declined the qualifying offer. And then also it was like, when you went to the offseason, obviously everybody's looking at like the ERA and it's like, well, this guy's been a Cy Young candidate. This guy's good. This guy's good. But I think all the people inside the game were saying, yeah, but his like stuff plus and all his like.
Oh, know, yeah. No, I heard it.
Stuff was well, good.
Yeah. So. But hey, well, listen, congratulations.
Yeah.
What would the Mets need right now if the trade deadline was tomorrow? Nothing. The best team ever.
Probably DH, because I like Winker, but if they could figure out a second half to the DH, because Starling Marte, I think.
There's a guy running a pickleball league down in South Florida.
I know, yeah.
And he was available.
He was like an assistant hitting coach at his time here, so it was almost like he was like a DH slash hitting coach. But, yeah, I think DH is always kind of
– You know what? Honestly, that's not a bad thing to need.
Yeah.
Because it's not you can just say even a guy who is, you know, can play whatever position is, all you need is a guy who can hit. And, yeah. And hey, you know what? I understand you want to play the field, but for these last 2 or 3 months, you're just going to hit, man. That's all it's going to hit. I haven't made my list of potential Mets for targets, but I'm just telling you, like,
yeah.
Congratulations, Mets.
Yeah, so.
Who in the white? I mean, Luis Robert?
Yeah.
You don't, all you have to do is hit.
He's kind of the funniest thing, because I have to imagine that, like, the White Sox value of him might be a little different than literally everybody else, because it's like we're still banking on that year.
See, that is, like, the perfect example we're talking about what Gomes said, Brandon Gomes, about the White Sox going back to last year, for instance, with Crochet. What they were asking for was insane.
Yeah.
And it was, and it's going to be the same thing across the board. It's just crazy. It might not be three times, but it's two times.
Yeah.
It's two times what you would have to probably give up. Where the Red Sox have got Garrett Crochet for Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, Chase Mydroth, and Wigelman Gonzalez at the trade deadline, I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I bet they said, no, you have to put Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony in that deal.
Yeah.
So.
Especially because all the GMs that you have on just say how there's so little sellers. So the ones that are sellers are like, we're just going to hold out. So you can, you know, whine and complain all you want, but you're not getting the guy unless you give us, you know.
Yeah. I think it's, and this is one of the things, I think we're going to have Ross Atkins on this week. One of the things I want to ask him is just, it seems like it's more difficult than ever to make a trade. It just is. Like, make a significant trade. I mean, you never see trades in May anyway, but yeah.
Outside of Luis Arraez last year was kind of a pretty.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's the Marlins doing Marlins, like, whatever. We're going to have to, it will be interesting to see if the Marlins 3 years from now are any good.
Yeah.
And because I don't want to crap on them one way or the other. I'm sure there's a method to what they're doing. Well, I know there's a method to what they're doing, and they got some good young pitchers coming up.
Yeah.
But these, a lot of the people who follow prospects who get so excited about the prospects, they're like, oh my goodness, they ripped everybody off. They ripped everybody off. Well, okay, well, let's come back to the Orioles.
Yeah.
Like, if you said about that, all these guys, and what if you, and now you, if you just had that team of Jackson Holliday and Kerstad and these other guys, you still aren't winning.
Yeah.
You need the guys. The guys. Who is going to tell me who the guy or guys are going to be? The Mets, the number one team on the Producer Evan power rankings, they have Soto, they have Alonso,
Lindor.
They have Lindor, they have the guys.
Yep.
You know, so. Yeah.
Now, and it must be a kind of a rough spot to be in, especially as the Marlins when Sandy Alcantara had like two good starts and they're like, so you planning on getting out of here? I'm like, man, that stinks. But
yeah. Yeah. Again. It's, I don't know. All right. I do know this. We solved a lot of the world's problems today, Evan.
There you go.
I feel like it. Thank you. Appreciate it.